I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. I hate to say I told you so. I hate to be right about this, but internal documents from Governor Bob Ferguson's office reveal that the NBA is seriously concerned about Washington State's business and tax climate as they weigh a return of the Sonics. Plus, Governor Ferguson's must-haves as the income tax vote nears. And remember that judge who agreed to remove a child from her parents' home over radical gender ideology? Well, she just got a promotion. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Yes, my eye looks stupid, okay? Let's just get it out of the way. I poked myself in the eye yesterday with my big, long fingernails. I had to go to the emergency room. Stupidest visit to the emergency room ever. I'll talk about it later in the show because I have business to get to, but that's why my eye looks all crazy, okay? Crazier than usual. They're already a little cockeyed, but now they just look extra crazy. I'll tell you the whole story when we get to comments, but I have other business to attend to. So I hate to be right on things that are so depressing, but I'm always going to tell you the truth, even if apparently sports people on X just really think I should stay in my lane and stick to politics and not talk about sports at all. But unfortunately for them, I mean, I would love to do that, obviously, but there's an intersection of these things. Professional sports is a business, like any other business, and they are going to weigh pros and cons when they decide where to have their business, when they decide what might get in the way of them being able to operate their business in a functional way. And so I am going to look at sports and talk about sports as I would many other businesses when it comes to the tax policy and business climate in Washington State. And it's why back on February 3rd, I was down in Olympia. I was at a press conference for Governor Bob Ferguson, and I asked him a question about the impact the income tax on millionaires might have on free agency for the NFL and maybe one day, hopefully, the NBA.
Governor, there's been a lot of small businesses who have been very happy with the Seahawks making it as far as they have because it's great for business.
Agreed.
And it's a sports question, so I had to consult some sports reporters this morning, but there is some angst about the free agency and how this could impact free agency and good players coming to Seattle, whether it's football or baseball, and kind of having a Dwayne Wade to Miami sort of situation where the team doesn't do as well and business suffers as a result. So how concerned are you about that, given there's sort of there is history of players moving from less tax-friendly states to more tax-friendly states?
Sure. So I've not seen that specifically, Brandi. Happy to take a look at it. Aware generally of that issue, I'd say. I think what I'd say is that, you know, most states have an income tax. And so football players still play in states where there is an income tax. But that said, I think what I would say is that from my standpoint, you know, and I think this is true for all of us who are working on this, by the way, is that we're trying to be thoughtful about what's the amount and who's paying it. What are the impacts of that? I had a meeting yesterday with folks in the business community to talk about that. So we're certainly aware of that. And so we're going to just have to try and structure this in a way that makes the most sense, that is the most fair to address the challenges we're facing. And I'll check more into that as well.
Yeah, so kind of a non-answer, said I'm vaguely aware of this issue, which, look, there is, as I articulated to the governor, there is some history here. There's a reason why all the best players went to play in Miami, and I'm not a sports expert. I consulted sports reporters before I asked him that question to inquire if it was totally off base. They said, absolutely not. There's some history there. And turns out, I mean, I knew that it was a legitimate line of inquiry. But when the governor said, you know, I'm vaguely aware of that, turns out his office was very aware of that potential concern. So you'll recall, so that was February 3rd. The very next day, there were headlines all over the place about Governor Bob Ferguson meeting with the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver. And Governor Ferguson's office was more than happy to sort of talk about the fact that they'd had what ended up being like a Zoom conversation, not an in-person meeting. But I thought at the time that was a little strange. I was like, man, I just asked him about this potential issue that this could hurt the return of the Sonics, essentially. through the quote-unquote millionaire's tax, which is just going to be an income tax on everyone. And then the very next day, all these headlines about, oh, Sonics might come back to Washington State. The NBA wants to return the Sonics to Seattle and all of these things. And they put out a statement at the time, the governor's office, his spokesperson Brianna Ajo did, told Como News, as a kid, the governor grew up attending many Sonics games and attending the Lenny Wilkins basketball camp. The governor recently reached out to Commissioner Adam Silver, requesting an introductory meeting. They had a good conversation, and the governor offered to be helpful. Okay, so we know that these conversations were happening with the Sonics around the time that I asked the governor that question, but little did we know that Adam Silver's office had expressed already some serious concern with the tax climate and business climate in Seattle and Washington State as it pertains directly to the return of the Seattle Supersonics. Our friend Ari Hoffman, he did a public disclosure request, and it wasn't even for this, but it ended up, I think, accidentally in the bundle of documents that he got, and wow, it is a gem. So this is an internal meeting briefing that the governor's office had sent out, getting the governor ready for his conversation with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. And it's basically like, hey, executive summary, this phone call is for you to introduce yourself to the commissioner. I love how basic this is. This phone call is for you to introduce yourself to the commissioner. It says background. It's like they're telling him reminding him what he thinks about the NBA. You have great interest in bringing the Sonics back to Seattle. Success hinges on securing the right investors and ensuring the city's infrastructure and environment support sustainable success beyond the initial deal. Your continued support, along with legislative backing, will be invaluable moving forward. State assistance could be critical, particularly in securing a practice facility, which is a key consideration for the commissioner. And then it has some background for the governor on Commissioner Adam Silver, so he knows a little bit about him, right? Here is the key, though, in this trove of documents obtained by Ari Hoffman. It has some background here. It says, Commissioner Silver is fully committed to returning the Sonics to Seattle, but emphasizes the importance of doing it right this time to ensure the team's long-term stability in the city. You'll remember the Sonics left, essentially, because the city and politicians refused to invest in the necessary infrastructure to keep them here. It says, the commissioner will continue to refrain from making any public commitments until a formal deal is finalized. Success hinges on securing the right investors. Samantha, who is someone with the commissioner's office, highlighted several key factors they and the commissioner are closely monitoring. So here are those key factors. Again, internal memo from the governor's office about what the commissioner of the NBA is saying about what it'll take to get the Seattle Sonics back. It says they are concerned about the high cost of maintaining a basketball team, the impact of employer layoffs in the area, which have been happening in part because of the bad business environment, challenges posed by the millionaire's tax on recruiting top players. Okay. And the stupid little sports trolls on X want me to stay in my lane when I'm the only one who'd ask the governor about exactly that. The challenges posed by the millionaire's tax on recruiting top players. So to those extras, you can suck it. And then it says whether Seattle remains an attractive and investor-friendly environment. Okay. It says noting recent investor relocations to Florida without specifying names. You guys, this is in an internal document. The commissioner of the NBA telling the governor of Washington, we're concerned with bringing the Sonics back because Seattle isn't an attractive and investor-friendly environment and people are moving to Florida. It says they stress the importance of the commissioner recognizing that Climate Pledge Arena is fully prepared for basketball, not just hockey. And then they basically say we want commitments to legislative backing. They want commitments that politicians are going to be supportive of the team coming back to Seattle, given what has happened in the past. And I have been making also these comments about the millionaire's tax, which will just turn into an income tax on everyone. But for now, millionaire's tax on income. I've also been expressing concern. I know I'm just a stupid girl who talks politics and I don't know anything about sports, but I do know how politics impacts business. And you have the Seahawks going up for sale. And you have, I think their contract with the stadium goes through like 2030, right? Well, if the millionaire's income tax passes, they'll start collecting the revenue from it in 2029. And that'll all be happening around the same time. Sale of the Seahawks, millionaire's income tax, an opportunity to get out of the contract with the stadium. And I've said, given what's happened with the Sonics, you would be it would be ridiculous to completely take it off the table that a new, wealthy buyer of the Seattle Seahawks would not look at the business climate around here with the capital gains tax that punishes wealth, with an income tax on millionaires that will not only make it more expensive for the owner to have assets here and to have wealth here, but for players in trying to get top talent to the Seattle Seahawks. I said it would be stupid to believe that there's a 0% chance that the Seattle Seahawks aren't sold to someone. The South Dakota Seahawks. Somebody said the Mar-a-Lago Seahawks. I mean, it really would be asinine to believe that as a business consideration wouldn't be taken seriously. And so, you know, these sports people on X who act like I'm just pulling that out of my you-know-what, these documents prove I'm not. These documents prove that at the highest levels of athletics, they look at this as a business, and they need a friendly business environment in order to come, in order to stay, and in order to thrive. And yes, the reasons for the Sonics leaving were different than an income tax or a wealth tax or a tax on capital gains. But it's all the fruit of the same poisonous tree. And it's a disrespect for the economic benefit of a pro sports team. It's a total disrespect, lack of acknowledgement that a team like the Sonics, that a winning team like the Seahawks brings in so much, contributes way more to the state than they take. And so in Seattle, it was like, oh, we're not going to help you out with the stadium and the infrastructure that you need. So they're like, okay, we will go somewhere to a state or a city that will. And for the Seahawks, you're going to, our players, it'll become overnight the most expensive state in the nation, and Seattle, the most expensive city in the nation to own or play for a pro sports team. You don't think that's a consideration? So again, I'm saying I told you so today because the documents prove the genesis, that the thought behind my question to the governor was valid. But I don't want to be here in 5 years and the Seahawks are leaving saying, well, I told you so. No, I want the Seahawks to stay. I'm not a huge Seahawks fan, but I support, you know, what they do economically for the city. I think it's good. I think sports has a way to bring people together. I think that's a very good thing. And I would love the Sonics to come back. When I was a little kid growing up in Minnesota, I collected Sean Kemp cards. Before I even had dreams of moving to Seattle, I collected Sean Kemp cards. He was my favorite player. And then I stupidly, in third grade, gave them away to this boy I liked who turned into a total loser. And I had a whole thing of them. Really should have kept those. And then later in life, when I moved to Seattle, I met Sean Kemp and I told him that I had collected his cards in the third grade. And he's like, don't tell me that, because it made him feel old. But anyway, I would love the Sonics to come back. But you have to, for all the unhinged, like, these are the kind of people on X, these sports accounts, like this Mariners Muse account that called me a right-wing grifter for suggesting that the Seahawks might leave over the business environment. Oh, the right-wing grifter should stick to politics. And then he got ratioed to high heaven and deleted his attack on me. But, you know, if you really care about these teams and you care about the success of these teams, which I think you do, right? Let's be realistic about it. Let's remember they're a business at the end of the day. And they might have some loyalty, right, to the fan base that has led to their success. But at the end of the day, if they can't thrive as a business, they're going to make decisions like any other business would. And I know that some of those accounts like Mariner Muse, these are probably the people who fly the Antifa flag at the, you know, at the soccer games and stuff, and you're uber leftists. But in this case, it's to your own detriment. You have to understand that they're a business first and foremost. So speaking of the income tax on millionaires that will just become an income tax on everyone, as you know, it passed in the Senate. And this is like national news right now, because this is all happening so quickly with all this exodus from California, exodus from Colorado, all these blue states suddenly, I mean, businesses like popping up in Florida and Tennessee trying to attract people by getting rid of their property tax, all these things. And then we're here just doubling, tripling down on the policies that have led to this exodus of wealth. And so the Senate passed the income tax on millionaires. It'll go over to the House. And remember, the governor has said that he wasn't thrilled with the version that passed out of the Senate. I'm going to play a few things that he said, but I want you to remember that this is the exact same playbook that Governor Ferguson carried out last year. Remember, he ran for office, he got elected in 2024 on being a fiscal hawk. And in his first address, his inaugural address, he says, we need to be serious about understanding how we got in this big budget crisis, right? And then, you know, Democrats came and they proposed $20 billion in new taxes. And what did the governor do? He came out and said, shame on you. That's too many taxes. And then he came back and he approved $9 billion in state taxes and $14 billion across the board. And I said at the time, he's setting himself up not to be the bad guy. He was always going to pass the largest tax increase in state history. But he wanted to act as if, oh, he was sending them back to the drawing board. $20 billion is too much. Apparently $14 billion isn't. He's doing the exact same thing here. He's going to pass the income tax. He just wants to look like he's not the worst person at the table. He wants legislative Democrats to look like that. So they already have a deal. Trust me. We already learned this lesson. They already know exactly how this income tax is going to play out and exactly what it's going to look like when it gets to the governor's desk. But he just wants them to let him push back a little bit so he can look like he at least tried to help people and tried to make sure that some of the impacts of the income tax wouldn't be so severe. So here's what he said about the version passed out of the Senate.
I've said multiple times that any bill I sign must send a significant percentage of the revenue back to Washington families and small business owners. We are not there yet, and we are still not close to being there. This bill must be laser focused on making life more affordable for Washingtonians and continuing to improve areas like K-12 education.
So this is the same thing. It's the same thing he did last year. I do not buy it for a second. I'm not going to be fooled again. And I don't think I was really fooled the first time either. I was cautiously optimistic. And then I even said, this is what he's doing. So he said one of his priorities, and this is why it's just total BS. One of his priorities is trying to build into this more tax relief for small businesses.
So first, we need to make life more affordable for small business owners. So as I've said before, we need to go much bigger to assist small business owners who help power our economy and create jobs. We should use $1 billion of this new revenue to give small business owners a significant, and that's an understatement, tax break. That means dramatically increasing the small business tax credit, which effectively wipes out B&O tax on the first $2.5 million in total revenue for that business.
Okay, so what's wrong with that? Because you would think I'd be like, oh, yeah, help businesses out. He just last year passed the largest tax increase in state history on the backs of small businesses when it comes to increasing the B&O tax. So is this going to undo what you did just last year? You just screwed him over last year, and now you're saying, oh, my gosh, I am the best. And if we pass this income tax on millionaires, I'm going to give relief. I'm such a gracious overlord. I'm going to give relief to the businesses I just screwed over? Is it even going to be a net even or a net negative? I don't even know. I mean, it's just wild to me that he thinks that we're going to believe that. And then he says, as part of this, he would also want two state tax holidays, sales tax holidays.
We also need more sales tax relief. Sales tax hits Washingtonians hard because it's the same for everybody, regardless of your ability to afford it and pay for it. We all have essentials we need to purchase. So I'm proposing the following. First, let's create a sales tax holiday. 18 states do this already, where for a limited period of time, people can buy certain items without paying any sales tax at all. A sales tax holiday is understood by the public and would apply to all Washingtonians. My proposal includes two sales tax holidays, 1 3-day weekend, 1 2-day holiday. During that time, there'd be no sales tax on items less than $1,000. That would put approximately $141 million back in the pockets of Washingtonians every single year.
Okay. So here's the issue I have with that. I think sales tax holidays are a great idea. Florida does a lot of these tailored to specific industries. I mean, they have like a 2A sales tax holiday. They have an outdoor recreation sales tax holiday as you head into the summer months to help you buy fun stuff, to hang out with your family. I love that. But Republicans 2 years in a row have had bills in Washington state proposing certain sales tax exemptions and even temporary ones. Remember last year, they tried to get like a 2-week window to exempt school supplies from the sales tax. 2 weeks. Hey, we care about, I thought you guys cared about working class families. It can be expensive to send your kid back to school. Let's just do 2 weeks or so in the lead up to the school year where parents can buy school supplies and they won't be taxed on it. But Democrats, we can't do that. Oh, we're not going to do that. That was super narrow and tailored to a specific thing. And then just yesterday on the show or the day before, we talked about how Republicans tried to push an amendment on the floor in the income tax proposal on the floor of the Senate saying, okay, you're going to tax millionaires and get all this money. Can we then have a sales tax break on diapers? That's all. just, hey, how about we just say you're getting all this money, it's billions of dollars, that we won't charge sales tax for parents who need diapers for their babies. What did Democrats say? Nah, nope, can't do that. And Republicans even had a standalone bill that they didn't, that was separate from the amendment that they tried to push that would do just that. And Democrats didn't move it. So, I mean, Republicans have had this idea to carve out certain things at a time of record revenue. And remember, we do have record revenue in the state of Washington. They've tried to carve out sales tax holidays, and Democrats have said no. But now Bob Ferguson wants to be the white knight to race in and say sales tax holiday. Oh, my gosh, I am the best king ever. No, it just doesn't ring true. And the millionaire's tax on income, the overarching argument against it, is that that's not going to be what it is for long. They refuse to commit. Legislative Democrats, when asked directly, won't say that this won't just turn into an income tax on everyone. So we can discuss and debate the merits of taxing millionaires' income. And for a lot of us who are never going to probably be millionaires, like, we're like, okay, why do we care? Because in 3 or 4 years, it will be an income tax on everyone when too many of the millionaires flee, take their wealth with them, and we're not getting the revenue that we expected from the tax. It's just common sense. All right, coming up next, there was an arrest in one of these brawls that happened at a local student walkout, and the person arrested is an adult. And I'm like, what the hell were they doing at a student walkout? Assaulting someone. Just bizarre. We have some details on that. First, we had Dave Taylor with First Mark Insurance in studio the other week, and we talked to him a little bit about the experience that some of our undivided viewers and listeners have had in taking the First Mark Challenge. And we hear from so many folks. I mean, I just got an email from Robin, said, just joined First Mark. I'm going to be saving $100 a month. Yes, $100 a month. Thank you, which is $1,200 a year, of course. But then I hear from some people who say, hey, I took the First Mark Challenge, and they actually turned my business away. They said that my insurance was just fine. I talked to Dave about that. That to me is a sign of an honest company where you're going to say, hey, we can't beat that. You've got great insurance at a great price. I would keep it.
Yeah. And if I can just say this really clearly, we are good with that.
Yeah.
We are okay with that, mm-hmm. right? Because we believe there's three things that every customer should have. They should have the right coverage. They should have it at the most affordable price possible.
Yeah.
And they should get great service. If they're getting all three of those things where they are, then they should stay there.
Yeah.
Right? They're in a good place.
Yeah, they just want you to have good insurance and at the best price. And if that's with them, great. But if it's with your current carrier, then they're not going to try to trick you or force you into switching. And actually, First Mark is doing something really cool this month, and there's only a few days left in the month. So they're doing something in honor of our friend Dory Monson. And First Mark was a longtime sponsor of Dory's show. So February is Heart Month. And so what they're asking, if you're a member of the First Mark family or you've taken the First Mark challenge, they want you to do one of two things. So if you go leave First Mark a Google review, they're going to donate $25 to support leading edge cardiovascular care at Providence Everett. So if you leave a 5-star Google review, they'll donate $25 in honor of Dory Monson. And then if you share what they're calling a heart introduction, so if you help introduce a new client to First Mark, so sort of a referral, First Mark will donate $50 to help with cardiovascular care at Providence Everett. So helping strengthen heart health resources right here at home in honor of our friend Dory Monson. So if you've already taken the First Mark challenge, make sure to go do one of those two things. All right. You'll remember this fight. Issaquah, students in Issaquah, Washington, walked out like a lot of kids are doing to protest ICE. And there were a couple independent journalists there. And one of them, and well, she's kind of like a mom. Like I would say she's an influencer, kind of a mom influencer. And she was there recording kids and asking them questions when she was beat up. See it right there, having her punched, hair pulled. And this chick would not let go of her hair, dragged her into the street. And it took minutes for cops to do anything. Mob of angry children, absolutely insane. So that attacker has now been ID'd, and here's the interesting thing. So ConspiraCookie, who took a lot of that video and was out there, Issaquah student ICE walkout hair puller has been identified as 23-year-old hairstylist Nalia Asha Rin Martin, who posts a lot of pictures with pumpkins and what looks like pumpkin spice lattes and picking apples and stuff on social media. I gotta say, in the video, she looks pretty young, so good for her for 23. She actually did kind of look like a high school student. But my thing is, like, why the hell are you there at 23 years old? And one of the things that Conspira Cookie said is that her sister also faces potential charges. And so maybe the sister is a high schooler. We're still trying to piece that together. But indeed, Issaquah police arrested this woman. She was booked into jail on suspicion of fourth-degree assault. And she was released yesterday. Her bond was really low. I mean, on a fourth-degree assault beef, they're not going to hold you in jail for very long. But, I mean, that's good news. She was readily identifiable, and so now she faces a charge of assault in the fourth degree, as she should. And we know police are continuing to review footage from that student and apparently adult melee of the ICE walkout. Meanwhile, do you remember we had on the chief of police in Enumclaw, Washington, Tim Floyd, and because there was another melee that happened in the city of Enumclaw, which was just crazy, where a student, a minor, punched this independent journalist streamer right in the head. I mean, gave him a big goose egg. Multiple kids were arrested. But this is part of the conversation I had with the chief of Enumclaw at the time. Were there no adults present?
There were adults present. They were, from my understanding, they were across the street watching, acting as quote-unquote chaperones, apparently. I don't know who any of them are. I don't know if they are associated with the school district or not, or if they're just parents. But yeah, there were adults in the area, for sure.
Would you have hoped that they would have intervened?
I would have hoped that they would have, yeah, before it got out of hand, for sure.
Yeah, but they didn't. Why? Because they're radical activists. So there was a woman who was one of these chaperones that didn't do jack as these kids were. I mean, it was crazy. One of them was making death threats, saying if we had a gun, we would have shot you, talking to this independent journalist, the one who got punched in the head by a minor. Two arrests made. These parents standing by did nothing. One of them was identified as like this adult left-wing activist who posts all sorts of anti-ICE stuff. So she's not chaperoning. She loves it. She's out there watching this environment that she's created in this indoctrination in real time. Anyway, though, she got so much flack for this after she was ID'd that she actually took to her social media, issued an apology, although I think she's just being a smartass.
It has come to my attention that I owe a couple of apologies. Students had a brief interaction with a local business. When I saw that that was happening, I stepped in between the students and the proprietor. I stopped by your business today, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to shake your hand. I did bring you and your employees some pastries, and I hope you enjoy them. I bought those at a local international store. The young men driving a pickup truck with a controversial flag. I also apologize to you. When you passed me, I yelled, "Go home," and I made a gesture. Later, when you passed me again, you blew me a kiss, like that. And it still makes me smile to think about it, and I apologize to you as well. The next time I saw you, I did this. Because I'm Gen X and that's how we make hearts with our hands. It was wrong of me to yell at you when I saw you the first time. I ask your forgiveness. If you're so inclined, I'd like to buy you a beer. We're neighbors.
That was so weird. Her name's Clara Edge. And she isn't a member of the school district. She's not a teacher or a staff member, but she's very ideological and clearly had no issue standing by watching these kids act like a violent mob and assault people and death threats and all of these things and did nothing. And apparently she's saying she also screamed at and flipped off some guy with a controversial flag. What do you want to bet? It was either the American flag or a Trump flag. Highly controversial. So Clara says, if that was you, sir, she'd like to buy you a beer because you're neighbors. And she also dropped off, what was it, some pastries mm-hmm. to the business and wants you to know that she bought them at an international bakery. So, oh, it's just too much. It's good stuff. All right. Let's see here. We will get into our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, I encourage you to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Our friends at RHA have been wonderful advertisers on our show for a couple years now. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And I think becoming a member has a few benefits. You're going to be part of this community of landlords and housing providers across the state. They have a lot of events all over the state talking about policies that they want to pursue, policies that are being pursued that maybe they're trying to stop. And so you kind of can get in the fold there. And then they're down in Olympia this time of year advocating on your behalf to try to stop some of the bad policies that are happening, and then they can help you on an individual basis. If you need assistance with documents or trying to understand local, county, state laws, they can help you on a one-on-one basis. So I think being a member is totally worth it. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. So remember the story, of course, that we did on the 16-year-old girl who was essentially kidnapped by the state of Washington over radical gender ideology, and with the help of a judge who took her out of her home despite no evidence of abuse. Well, that judge just got a promotion. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, so just a quick recap on this. So there was a 16-year-old girl, is a 16-year-old girl named Eleanor Holman. She was attending the Puyallup School District, had some mental health issues, anxiety issues she was dealing with her family. We had her mom, Jody, on the show, of course. So then all of a sudden, the school counselor starts to give Eleanor information on gender clinics that she could go to during the day. And Eleanor starts to want to be called Elliot. And the family's got so much other stuff they're dealing with Eleanor, that they're not even aware of this, like, gender dysphoria issue. But behind the family's back, the school goes, they connect Eleanor with an outside law firm to try to help her get custody with someone else. Eleanor runs away from home, and there was this entirely insane trifecta that occurred that resulted in Eleanor being removed from her home and given guardianship. Guardianship of her was given to this homeless outreach advocate. So Eleanor had run away at some point, met this person on the street whose job it is to hand out naloxone and drug kits to the homeless drug abusers. Eleanor is convinced by whoever that that person, homeless outreach person, should be her guardian, because she doesn't think her family will believe in her desired gender. The Puyallup School District helps connect Eleanor with an entity called Team Child that acts as her attorney, goes to court so that this homeless outreach advocate can get temporary guardianship. And the case ends up going in front of a woman, Commissioner Doris Wolkin. She was a Pierce County commissioner at the time, had been featured in Seattle Gay News as a Black, clear, queer woman aiming to be elected to Pierce County Superior Court. And that judge, despite no evidence of abuse or anything like that, says, yeah, let's put this 16-year-old runaway in the temporary custody of a homeless outreach advocate, drug advocate that she met on the street. That sounds like a great idea. Now, thankfully, at some point, just to underscore how unhinged of a ruling this was by this activist judge, who, of course, has their own, like, ideology, eventually the family got a different commissioner on the case. And the commissioner came out and looked at all the evidence and said, there's literally no evidence here to take this child away from her family. And they ended up denying the continuation of the temporary guardianship with the homeless lady. It literally said, a hearing was held on the emergency minor guardianship petitioner motion. The court considered the petition, any objections, supporting documents, evidence in the record, including psychiatric records, police reports, unfounded letters from CPS, declarations and statements of the parties and interested others and counselors. The commissioner was not persuaded by the child's claims of abuse by the parents. So this other judge, Judge Peters, said, yeah, we're not taking this kid away from their family that's done nothing wrong. And so overruled this decision that had been made by Commissioner Doris Wolkins. And I firmly believe that this was a decision this commissioner made because they're LGBTQ. I believe that this was a decision they made because they're a member of this community. And this child said, I want to be Elliot, not Eleanor. And so Doris Wolkins' bias was put before any sort of facts or reason, and literally decided that this child, at least temporarily, was better off with some random stranger they met on the street who hands out drug kits to the homeless? It's insane. Well, guess what? She just got promoted. You know that office she was running for that she wasn't elected to, Pierce County Superior Court? Well, there was a vacancy, so guess who Bob Ferguson chose to fill it? Doris Wolkins. You have to be kidding me. I mean, you have to be kidding me. Today, Governor Bob Ferguson announced the appointment of current Pierce County Superior Court Commissioner Doris Wolkins to the position of Pierce County Superior Court Judge. Her appointment, effective February 25th, fills the position that Judge Karen Kirkendall's resignation will vacate. And then it goes on to talk about Wolkins' stunning career. Interesting. Nothing in here about taking a kid out of a perfectly healthy environment and placing them with a random homeless advocate from the streets. Yeah, but that's just failing up for you, failing up in Washington State.
She does like to roller skate.
Oh, but she likes to roller skate. Thank you, Nicole. I had not seen that part. In that case, she's perfectly qualified for the job. But in that same vein, remember, there's a case right now that challenges 5599, and that's the law that allows the state of Washington to do this. In the state of Washington, there's two reasons your kid can leave home and they won't tell you where your child is. You're physically abusing them, or you don't support their desired gender. And then a kid can run away from home and the state will not try to reunite you. They'll just hide the child from you. It's 5599 was the bill. We railed about it several years ago. I said it's the most dangerous bill I've ever covered. Well, now there is an effort to get the United States Supreme Court to take up a challenge to that law. We discussed on the show earlier this week the two amicus briefs that were filed in support of SCOTUS hearing this case. One of them mentioned specifically Jody Holman, who is the mother of Eleanor. So one of the briefs was about, after our story aired, one of the briefs was written to talk about what happened in the case of Eleanor and how the state was able to hide, and still, she's still missing, by the way, hide her location from her family. And so they're using this story to try to get the United States Supreme Court to take up the case. There are a couple other people who are also weighing in, urging SCOTUS to hear the challenges to 5599. America's Frontline Doctors put out a statement saying fit parents must not be branded unfit for rejecting gender ideology. They have also filed a brief with SCOTUS, and I do think momentum is building on this, and in the next couple weeks we'll probably hear that SCOTUS is going to take this case up. Also, I thought this was interesting, the Attorney General of the state of Idaho. He came out and he asked the Supreme Court to stop Washington State from hiding runaway children and performing gender transitions on minors. And at first I was like, well, why does the Attorney General of Idaho care? But think about that. It's on the border of Washington. You got a kid who's confused and they run away to Washington State because they know they can be hidden here. They know that not only will the state of Washington not tell their parents back in Idaho where they are, but the state of Washington, the laws allow them to pursue gender transition here. If they're ruled a mature minor, they can basically get anything done. And so, yeah, hell yeah, the Attorney General of the state of Idaho and the state of Idaho in general and parents there have a huge stake in the United States Supreme Court deciding whether 5599 is constitutional. And it isn't. And I think that if SCOTUS takes the case, it will be struck down. And that will be a huge win for parents. It literally makes no sense. It's kind of creepy, actually. And it's groomer behavior. It really is groomer behavior to say you can have a perfectly fit family, but if you don't want Eleanor to be Elliot, the state can take your child away and hide them from you. So I appreciate and I express my gratitude to all these individuals for hearing the story of Eleanor and the Holman family. And they're not the only ones, by the way. There have been other families that have lost their children to this law. And I think it's in the benefit of every family and parent in the nation for the United States Supreme Court to really put a flag in the ground and say, parents are the primary stakeholders in their kids' lives and the government can never intervene between the two. All right, coming up next in national, Congresswoman Prilla Jayapal of our state thinks that we're just jealous of trans people. Maybe that's it. Gosh, that's why I don't want boys to compete against girls. I'm just jealous. We'll discuss. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I had a great conversation yesterday with an undivided viewer who used Wes to sell his home. And he said, you know, I know Wes sells multi-million dollar homes in Bellevue, but he made me feel like I was his most important client. And I just love to hear that. And he had a great experience with Wes. So keep sharing those success stories. We love to hear the experiences that you have with our show advertisers. But one of the things that really works for Wes's clients is that they take a really proactive approach approach to preparing listings. So Wes, for 10 years, has been doing pre-inspections, pre-listing inspections. So they're already going in before you even list, and they're going to figure out if there's anything that might come up, any problems, any really egregious sort of cosmetic issues. And then he can help you fix all that before the listing even goes up. So it takes some of that uncertainty away as you get toward closing. So that's just one of the great services that you'll find with Wes Jones. SellWithWes.com. SellWithWes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of the state of Washington, who represents the Seattle area, she's a trans child. At least I think her child still thinks they're trans. So a little bit of a personal thing in here. So she's been trying to push this trans bill of rights. And this would codify certain protections for transgender people under law. And she says that people who don't support it, well, we are just jealous of trans individuals.
To trans people everywhere, I also want you to know this. Those people are threatened by your strength,
okay,
by your joy in being fully who you are. Those who fight against trans people are just jealous of the freedom that they have taken to be fully who they are.
Okay, I mean, I feel like I'm fully who I am. But since I'm very confused by that, am I not being fully who I am unless I'm transgender? It's very strange. So this is all really about jealousy. I loved this clip I saw. I just had to play it today since we've been talking about this issue so much. You know, we need to see more school board members, more politicians at every level, even if they can't sometimes have a direct impact on some of these policies. You're independently elected officials. I think that you should say how you feel. Even if you can't change it, I discussed this with the Puyallup School Board. You know, the Puyallup School Board is mad because there's all this hate towards them because there's all these stories around, you know, boys and girls sports and boys and girls spaces. And they're like, look, this is a state policy. We have to allow it. But that doesn't mean you can't push back against it. That doesn't mean you can't sue the state over it. That doesn't mean that you can't make your voice heard and add to a growing chorus of people who have had enough. And I love that this woman in California, so this is in the Elk Grove Unified School District in California, which is near Sacramento, board trustee Heidi Moore, they were weighing a policy that would allow students and codify that students can participate in the sport that aligns with their gender identity. And she said, I'm not doing that.
Tonight, we are the adults in the room. We are the adults who can ensure that girls in our district will never be placed in a situation where they lose opportunities to a male, are forced to undress in front of males, or subjected to sexual assault in their competitions. We have the power to ensure that thousands of girls in our district have equal opportunities in sports and protection from the types of situations I have shared. This proposed policy states, quote, the board desires to give student health and safety the highest consideration in planning and conducting athletic activities, end quote. If we adopt a policy that continues to allow biological boys in girls' sports and private spaces, this statement is a lie. 100%. It is not safe or healthy to allow boys in girls' sports and private spaces or in their locker rooms. One mom already shared right here at one of our board meetings that her daughter has been forced to undress with three boys at Franklin High School.
Crazy.
This isn't a rare incident, as some might like to suggest. Furthermore, several districts in California and other states are already being investigated by the U.S. Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Justice regarding their non-compliance with Title IX. As the fourth largest district in the state, adopting such a policy will make us a target for investigation of non-compliance with Title IX. I refuse to put my name on this policy that threatens girls' equal opportunity, privacy, and safety.
God, good for you. And she was the only dissent. The policy passed. Gosh, which is just insane, because just when you think that the tide is turning, it's like, no, we're going to do this. And she makes such a good point in there. They always talk about this about student health and safety. Clearly not. Student health and safety that you think for the trans students, which are this tiny little sliver. But then you don't care about safety, about security, about what's comfortable or uncomfortable for the girls. They're a total afterthought for you. And you can tell in her voice that she's upset, but she's also probably pretty scared about saying what she's saying in an environment like that, in a state like California, in a blue area like Sacramento. But I mean, that's the kind of bravery it takes person by person to just speak out what you know to be true. And it's so frustrating to know that there are so many Democrats. There are so many Democrats and even progressives who understand that this is stupid, who understand that it should come to an end, but either don't want to admit the mistake or don't want to be attacked by their own side. Kansas also, although this is not such a surprise in Kansas, but a little win there. In Kansas, they decided to ban men from women's bathrooms. It's common sense. Yes. So the House overrode a veto from the governor. So there was a bathroom bill that basically did this, went to the governor. The governor didn't approve, or the governor vetoed it. And the House came back and said, screw you. We have enough votes to override your veto, which I thought was pretty cool. So that happened in Kansas. All right. It is Thursday. And on Thursday, we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. A lot there happening there on the education front, totally opposite of what's happening in Washington State when it comes to these student walkouts. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Greetings. I got so many comments about how beautiful your hair looks, and now in front of that blue, oh my gosh, good for you. I like the blonde. Maybe I should go blonder. Because I was for a minute the blonder sister again, and then you had to out blonde me. And I don't know if I can go any blonder than this. This might be it. So, all right. We played a clip on the show yesterday of, so the Florida Teachers Union has a press conference, and they invite this guy who's not with the Teachers Union, but he's with some activist organization. And he, surrounded by members of the Florida Education Association, says that it's a requirement that students walk out to protest fascism.
They stand together and demand safety for their peers, their families, and themselves. And that response, while framed by some politicians as radical, is rather reasonable. It's rational. And in a moment like this, it is required.
So that happened. But now the Florida Education Association is coming out yet again and saying, oh, no, we don't believe that. Are they just really scared of the state?
I think it's probably one of two things. They're scared because leadership has made it very clear that this is not something that they're going to tolerate. And also, I do think that you do have a little bit more of sane voices prevailing in the state. So I do think more often than not, you're going to find people that are involved in the Education Association and the teachers union that also agree with the leadership of the state that education is a priority above and beyond walkouts and all these kind of political advocate things going on.
Yeah,
so
that's true. I mean, you have a more conservative population, so naturally you're going to have more conservative teachers than a state like Washington does. So their membership, although I don't think any education association is fully sane, might be a little more sane in Florida. Meanwhile, we've seen this happen a couple times in Washington State, go crazy viral. There's this dad in Florida who found out there was going to be some sort of walkout, was angry about it, went to yank his kid. Here's the video.
I'm here to check out Aiden LeBlanc because of the protesting. You know, you got kids down there on the overpass. Just about got hit by a car just a second ago. About caused a wreck. Sad.
We do have admins out. You should be sent.
You have like 1,000 kids on the overpass. About one just about got hit by a car.
Okay, we did let the deputies know because the students that did walk out, the deputies are dealing with. They had a ICE protest on campus that was friendly and was supposed to be safe for that.
This is for school. This isn't for, kids shouldn't be involved in that shit. This is for learning. I have to leave work because while I'm working, I have to worry about what you're manipulating my kids into listening to. It's fake media. I want my son out of here now. Can you call him up here and get him out of here?
And I love that. I love that. It's like, yeah, if you don't feel like if something's happening at your child's school that you're not comfortable with, taking them out as a parent is totally your right to do so.
Absolutely. And I think in a state like Florida, when leaders like DeSantis and our education commissioner see this happening, it's going to make them even more fierce in their opposition of these walkouts, because education has been something Florida has put first and foremost as a priority for years.
Yeah.
So something like this getting in the way of education, you know, and parents stepping in and being like, all right, like, we're not even going to put up with this. I think that's going to really just kind of, you know, secure the whole conversation that this is not something that we put up with in the state of Florida.
Well, and there's also considerations, as I've said here, about, okay, who pays if somebody gets hurt, right? If kids walk out, and I've been saying, they're out in the middle of the street. no adult chaperones. There's been assaults here and melees. And you know, I think it was somewhere in the Midwest, a kid hit by a car. And this story is just going out because the video, this is from 12 News in Palm Beach. Minor struck by car during student-led protest against ICE in Palm Beach County. And thankfully, the kid is going to survive, but obviously was very seriously injured. And it's like, okay, yes, the student has some responsibility. I don't know if their parent has responsibility, if their parent said, go do this or whatever it is, but you drop your kids off at school. There's an assumption that they're going to be in a safe environment. And if you just let them walk on out of class in school, you can't keep them safe.
Yeah, you can't. And it's not one kid. It's entire classrooms of children walking out. You can't control that, even if you think as a teacher or an organizer that, look, oh, we have control over the situation. You don't.
Yeah.
These kids are finding themselves in the street. Our governor's made it very clear that if you see protesters blocking traffic, you can do what you need to do. And like, I would hope that most people would see these as children, but like, you know, it's just, it's bound to happen, like you said, and it is happening. So
that's a really interesting point, because remember, we did it on Florida Report when DeSantis came out and said, if protesters surround your car, you have every right basically to run them over to get out of there. So if they're kids, I mean, in theory, that sentiment would still stand. And we've seen the mobs of angry kids here. They've gotten violent. Arrests have been made. And so kids all spun up with indoctrination are every bit as capable of violence and this mob mentality. And I just want to note this post from the, okay, you got to teach me how to say his name. So he's the head of he's the Florida Commissioner of Education. Yeah. Anastasios Kamoutsas. Is that it?
That's
such
it.
And for short, Stassi.
Yeah,
what a cool name. Okay, so he retweeted the video of the dad who went and took his kid out of class, and he basically told parents, we want you to snitch on schools that are encouraging this behavior.
Yeah, he put out a tweet that says, under Governor Ron DeSantis, Florida does not and will not allow school officials to encourage students to walk out to protest. If a parent has any evidence of this happening, they can contact our office and we will immediately take action. And he led with a phone number and an email address.
Love that. Yeah, we got to keep kids safe. For all the hand-wringing that Democrats do about, oh my gosh, school shootings and all this, and I'm not saying that's not a big deal when it happens in the very rare instance, but you have to want to protect kids in all scenarios. Them walking out to support and protest something that matches your ideology also puts them in danger. So do you care about the safety of kids or do you not care about the safety of kids? All right, one more thing, because taxes are just going up, up, up in the state of Washington, and Florida is one of the states obviously taking advantage of our poor decision-making, and it might even get more advantageous to move to Florida. So DeSantis, I'll just play the clip quick on Fox News. He's saying that he believes voters will get to decide in Florida in November on whether to eliminate the property tax. Here he is.
So we got to put it on the ballot and the voters have to approve it. It's a constitutional issue in Florida. It's not something the state derives revenue for. It's a local issue. We're trying to focus on Florida homeowners and their primary resident, people that have Airbnbs or whatever, you know, that's separate. Yeah. But your personal home, you shouldn't rent it from the government. You should own it. And, you know, you're paying taxes for 50 years, but even for young families, it's become very difficult across this country to make ends meet. Wouldn't it be great if they were able to have home ownership without having the burden of property tax that? So that's coming to a ballot near you in November of 2026, and we need 60% of Florida voters to do it. And I think it's going to be very popular, but it's also something that's not an easy bar to reach when you have an election like that.
Yeah, you're a new homeowner. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for a lot of the homes that we looked at and saw, the property taxes in those areas were the difference between whether or not we could afford that house. The mortgage is one thing, but property taxes in Florida are very high. Everyone I know, including ourselves that now own a home, that we feel the property taxes. If they were just half of what they are, more people that I know could afford to buy a house. But when you factor in property tax and the really high insurance you need to live in a state like Florida, it makes home ownership almost out of reach for just about everybody I know that works very hard in their lives. So a break. It's not just for people who've owned their homes for 50 years, but to get young families back into homes and see kids in neighborhoods again. I think the only way to really do that is to give people a break with property taxes.
Yeah, like for Texas, for instance, there's always these jokes about you could buy like a $300,000 mansion in Texas, but the property taxes are very high. Now, my concern in Florida would be this is already a state that's pretty stingy on taxation, and that's a good thing, right? Now, there are some core functions of government that need to be met. I mean, in these cities that levy these property taxes, public safety, maintaining roads, maintaining infrastructure, and that's going to vary city to city. So my only concern would be in a state that already, you know, doesn't just tax for the sake of taxation, what do those taxes pay for? And if it is critical infrastructure or government programs, what is the plan to pay for that stuff? And is it just going to result in some other sort of tax to balance it out? So I think that would be kind of what my question is on it. I'm very anti-tax, but there are some things that we need to help with that are in the greater good of the public, like the highway system and whatever it is. So
it's true, but when you also look at the type of people that live in Florida, there's maybe 60% of our population is we live here full time. The rest are second homeowners, snowbirds, Airbnb owners. So I think that they're trying to give people who call Florida home the first and foremost, we get the break.
Yeah, I really believe that it should be something like, you know, if you've lived in the same home for 20 years, you no longer have to pay property taxes. Or if you're retirement age, you know, or in retirement, like let's say over 65 and pulling Social Security, you no longer have to pay property taxes. We've got to do something because here you've got older people who live in their home for such a long time. And then eventually their property tax bill exceeds the initial mortgage payment they had on their home decades ago when they bought it. And then they have to sell. And that's just not right. It's just not right. So, all right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we'll do our daily subscriber show poll coming up next, and I'll tell you what happened to my eye, my very dramatic visit to the emergency room yesterday. Thank you to the people saying, I can't tell. Yes, you can. It's fine. You don't have to. It's fine. I already feel bad about myself. First, February is Valentine Roofing Month, so that means that they're expanding their customer referral program through the end of February. So if you've used Valentine for anything and you refer someone for a new roof or siding, you can earn your choice of a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card, which I think is pretty cool. So a lot of stuff you can put that towards with Valentine. I got my gutters looked at after the big storm, and then they took a look at our roof as well, and they cleaned our gutters. And so I could have used a $250 gift card toward that. That would have been nice. And as you know, if you refer your loved ones, you can always be confident that they're going to get the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service, even in the winter weather. And I know getting a new roof is like the last thing any homeowner wants to do, but sometimes you just don't have a choice. And so Valentine has flexible financing options available with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So call 206-ROOFING if you want to get a service from Valentine. You can get a free estimate. And if you've already gotten a service from Valentine, I recommend before the end of February taking advantage of this expanded referral program bonus that they're having. So 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING, and tell Valentine that you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, I'll talk about my eye next. First, in our subscriber poll on Patreon Locals and X, and I saw somebody in the YouTube chat say, I stopped freeloading today, Brandy. Thank you for becoming a paid subscriber. I also, this is funny, maybe we'll play this clip on the show next week. We were doing a review for Wes Jones. So one of our, occasionally we'll do, you know, interviews to air on the show with people who've used our advertisers. And the guy says that, so he sold his home with Wes, and he got over asking, like $100,000 over asking or something like that. And he says, so I stopped being a freeloader. And I told myself that if Wes sold my house for over asking price, I'd finally subscribe to Undivided, which he finally did, which I thought was nice. Anyway, I asked our subscribers on Patreon Locals and X, which political party do you believe does more for the working class? Democrats, Republicans, or about the same? And this question was born out of my frustration that Democrats had rejected the proposed sales tax break for buying diapers. Because I'm like, man, that is such an easy thing to do. And it's not even going to cost the state that much in revenue. It was just like they wouldn't do it because Republicans wanted it or something. Mm-hmm. And it had to be their idea. So, Nicole, what do you think?
Well, in this state, absolutely, Republicans would like to do more for the working class. But
it's kind of hard.
They're not allowed. They're not able to. And so gosh, I don't know, because I really just don't think that it's a consideration at all for Democrats. I think that they're like, you know,
they care about the unions, which are workers, but it's like they're so obsessed with lining the pockets of the union leaders that I don't know that they actually care about the working class.
I don't
class.
Think it's the working class, because otherwise you wouldn't be passing a millionaire tax. You wouldn't be passing these B&O taxes. You wouldn't be. I mean, I think they pretend, but I think they care more about the union leaders and or the union just in general. And then the, you know, all the BIPOCs and the LGBTQs and everything's for minority groups.
Yeah, I mean, I think Republicans for sure, but if they had more power, they could obviously do more. There's not a lot they can accomplish. 86% said Republicans, 86%. No one said Democrats, which is surprising, because we have some Democratic viewers who will often pick the unpopular option in our polls. Zero said Democrats. 13% said about the same.
It's about rough. The same. I mean, they just keep closing. Businesses just keep closing.
Yeah. So, let's see.
Class, I don't know.
Eileen, some R's care, but the R rhinos are just as bad as Democrats. I hate the word rhino. Eileen, you know this. But they only care about their power. Washington is awful in its policies and mismanagement. So wasteful. Midnight Rider, Republicans are not the answer to the problems we face in Washington state and nationwide, but Democrats are definitely the cause. That's a good way of putting it. Like, we know who did this, but could Republicans fix it? I mean, you know, I don't trust a political party to really fix anything, but I think there's good politicians within political parties who could do the right things if they were unshackled, maybe. Sure. Jeanette, neither. They stopped listening to their constituents ages ago and treat all of us as ignorant, uninformed plebes who need them to tell us what's good for us. I love the word plebes. I'd be curious what the genesis sounds like. A medieval word.
What is it?
Plebes.
Plebes.
Yeah. It's like peasants, basically, right? Yeah. Let's see. Lewis, the Republicans have done more for the working class. The Democrats are more focused on using the working class, I think is what you meant. Pickle Man, the supposed good the Democratic Party does is usually short-lived with long-term repercussions that eventually cause more harm than good. That's a really good point, because look at what they did with like the a lot of the gig workers, like the DoorDash and stuff.
Sure.
Like, they wanted to help them, but then ultimately hurt them because fewer people were ordering because of increased fees.
Right.
So like, maybe the idea was right, but the outcome wasn't correct.
I think that's the thing, is you have to have some place to work if you're going to be a worker. So so they're killing businesses, killing the jobs by killing businesses.
Yeah.
So.
I just noticed you had your Freedom shirt on today.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to join me for comments?
Oh,
we're going to go into that, and I'll tell people what happened to my eye yesterday. So we're done with the show yesterday, like maybe 5 minutes after. And I go into the bathroom. You know, I got these long nails. ASMR.
They're very long. Yeah.
ASMR.
Pointy.
And I just had something in my eye. And I just went to like the corner of my eye. And I think I just overshot. And I jabbed myself in the eye. And look, like, did it feel good? No. But it didn't hurt a lot. But it started bleeding pretty quickly. And I was like, look at what I did to my eye. It's more so like down and up. So like, it's actually in a pretty good spot, because it's starting to like spread down, not over. But anyway, so I kind of was like laughing. I'm like, oh my God. Because immediately it's like, looks terrible.
It's just spreading. So it's not bleeding out.
Right.
It's just spreading. Like, it's red and spreading.
So it's going to look worse in the next couple of days. But I remember when Dave Reichert had, during, he had his first debate. And he had this broken a blood vessel. And I was like, man. And it stayed for like 2 weeks. There was nothing he could do about it. So I'm like, shoot. And I'm just laughing to Nicole. I'm like, I'm going to have this eye that's going to look worse and worse. And it's going to be here for 2 weeks. And then I just leave. I'm like, whatever. I can't do anything about it.
Well, it's funny because it looks like pink eye, right? Everybody thinks you have pink eye. So I think that's the worst part.
Oh, no. I didn't even think about that.
It's not pink eye.
No. So anyway, I'm driving home. And I call my husband. And I said, I jabbed myself in the eye with my finger. And it's like bleeding. And he goes, you have to go to the emergency room. I'm like, no, I don't. I said, it doesn't even hurt. He's like, no, you need Nicole to drive you to the emergency room.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
And I'm like, I'm already in the car.
And by the way, I said you need to call your eye doctor.
Well, right.
I didn't say go straight to the emergency room, but I was concerned and said you need to go to your eye doctor.
You need to go to the emergency room. And I'm thinking, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, let me call you back. So I call the eye doctor near my house that I've been to for like an eye test before. And I said, is this an emergency? And I described what happened. And she's like, let me talk to the doctor quick. Comes back. The doctor says that he wants you to go to the emergency room. And I'm like, no. And I'm laughing. I'm like, I'm not going to the... She's like, yeah, he thinks out of an abundance of caution, you should go to the emergency room. So I'm driving through Bellevue. I'm like, oh my God. First, my husband's right, and that bothers me. So I have to make a U-turn, go to the emergency room, and I've never felt dumber. And I'm like, people go here because they got shot. And I poked myself in the eye, and I have to be at the emergency room. But anyway, I did that. I'm fine. I cannot believe I went to the emergency room over this. And my eye is just going to look like this and probably worse when I get back on Monday.
We didn't tell him what it was, so it's a little tear, right?
Yeah, there's a little something in there that I did with my pokey nail. But no, I just got these little drops. It wasn't a big deal. I don't think I had to go to the emergency room. But anyway.
How long is it supposed to be like this for?
Up like 10 to 14 days.
It's just crazy.
It's going to look worse on Monday. Anyway, my big thing before I read comments is now in every clip, I'm going to look like this without any context, but maybe it's not as bad as I think.
Because you made fun of my black eye a couple of years ago.
Do you guys remember when Nicole had a huge black eye from softball? It was grotesque. It really was grotesque.
It was.
But that was much worse, yes. All right, on me saying, I hate to say I told you so with the Sonics thing, country guy, if you don't think politics are involved in getting a B-ball team and the Seahawks sale, you don't understand the real world. I agree. Mm-hmm. And it's at least enough of a concern not to dismiss it and dismiss me as a right-wing grifter because I'm suggesting that this could be a factor when bad political decisions were a factor in losing another professional
Trolls.
Team. Trolls. Go back to waving your Antifa flag at the Sounders game, loser. I said after the Seahawks won the Super Bowl that they would be sold and they would be moved and we won't get the B-ball team because the millionaire tax on the show poll about the Super Bowl win. You did say that, E. So you're a right-wing grifter too. Chuck, players will hesitate to move here to play. Owners will have to compensate for millionaire tax and pay more, ergo higher than average ticket prices. Right. People need to think these things through. What do you want? You want the Sonics back or you want an income tax on millionaires? That's going to just be an income tax on everyone. That's the decision you have to make. I mean, I care more about other businesses, but when you look at it as a business, that's why I care about the professional sports teams, is they provide so many jobs, so many opportunities, especially in like, you know, where the Seahawks and the Mariners play. Those businesses have struggled. The homeless crisis is horrible down there. Chinatown International District, they need those teams to do well and those teams to be here, or the city's just going to fail. And we wouldn't have the World Cup coming. We wouldn't have had the MLB All-Star game. So you cannot dismiss it for political, because I can call Brandy a right-wing grifter.
You can't take it back. After we lose a team, you can't say, okay, like we'll get rid of that now. And maybe they'll come. Like, they'll be gone again.
They're done. On Bob Ferguson saying what he needs to pass the millionaire's tax, which he's already going to pass. Robert, watched the governor yesterday on his requirements for the income tax. It seems to be about the sweeteners. We're being totally set up. The final approach will be, if the income tax is approved, then we won't get all of these tax breaks. Plus, has anyone figured out how the Department of Revenue will set the tax up and what their overhead costs will be? Yeah, all of that is something to look into. Blaine, sales tax holiday. Go buy something with the money you don't have. LOL. Yeah. We'll ruin our economy, but at least you can, you know, go buy something fun for yourself without a sales tax.
Buy a new TV.
On the 23-year-old arrested for her conduct at the student walkout turned riot, Anna says the far left are well organized and more embedded than most want to believe. Crystal, something needs to change. These parents need to step in and talk and discipline their children. But that's the thing, is so many of these parents support it. So many of these parents are totally in support of their kids being, you know, left-wing activists and not just letting them be kids. Like, you know, believe what you want to believe politically, but don't drag your kids to protests. Just let your kids be kids. Oh, my gosh. Like, when we were kids, we would never, our parents would have never dreamed. And my parents were like children of the 70s. Like, my dad was a total anti-war, all this. He never would have dreamed of dragging us to an anti-government protest. Just, he would talk to us about how much the IRS sucks and the government and stuff, but he would never drag us anywhere.
I do like this principal from Pennsylvania that ended up going outside and telling every kid that they were going to be suspended if they stayed out there.
And he's like, you have a decision to make right now. And they're in the parking lot. And one of them calls her mom, like, do I have to listen to him, basically? I'm like, good grief.
Love it, though.
I didn't know where that was. You said that was where?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. I saw the video. I just didn't know where it was from. I knew it wasn't Washington. Let's see. On the judge getting a promotion, Beaming Up says, I called red state legislators after the Eleanor story to get them to write national laws to protect us and our kids. We all need to do that. I agree. And, you know, like the AG in Idaho standing up, because they all have something in stake here. As kids could flee from anywhere in the nation to come here for this weird gender ideology safe space and then go back home one day a different gender, quote unquote. Let's see. Lolly says it's evil. It's destroying families. Daryl, the judge needs to be removed, not moved up. On Jayapal saying, we're just jealous of trans kids. Lynn says, I'm jealous that they get free hair removal in prison and us on the outside have to it's pay expensive. For our own. In fact, there was this great expose from the Daily Wire that dropped this mm-hmm. morning that we'll talk about on Monday, but it has to do with, they took a real close look at how much money is actually being spent on this gender surgery stuff for prison inmates. It's insane. It's more than I even thought. Mm. Let's see. One super chat here I'll fit in from Matt. If Miranda loses her voice, Undivided will literally be the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Monkeys, yes. Nicole can't hear. Yeah. I can see, but I get the joke. And then Miranda, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay, well, it's not out of the realm of possibility. She's got a very raspy voice. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. Great clip from the White House that we'll end the show with. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement and your retirement portfolio? If you're overwhelmed with all the noise around AI, crypto, tech, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital for a second opinion on your investments and retirement portfolio. If you're just questioning if it's positioned for all these financial changes and uncertainties, it's just smart to get a second opinion. So you can do that with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Bulwark is focused on risk management built around the fundamentals of value investing. They are always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every single day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and all his other social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast and go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's go to our closing sanity check. So this is a funny clip, but it actually has kind of a serious backdrop. So there was a Black History Month celebration at the White House, and a woman who spoke, her grandson was killed in 2017 in Washington, D.C., right? He was just 22 years old. And of course, you know, Trump tried to clean up D.C. and reduce the murder rate like overnight. So anyway, she was at the White House and gave one hell of a defense of President Trump.
Come on.
First of all, can I have a hug?
Yes, you can.
She acts all shy, and then she just kills it.
So nice. Thank you. I like her. Please.
I like him, too. One thing I like about him, he keeps it real, just like Grandma. I appreciate that because I can trust him because he tells exactly how he feels and what he thinks. Thank God for this president. You take a life, you do life. Just that simple. If you do a hush crime, you do hush time. Just that simple. And then we need National Guard, and which we did years ago. He brought it on. I love him. I don't want to hear nothing you got to say about that racist stuff. And don't be looking at me on the news hating on me because I'm standing up for somebody that deserves to be stand up for. Get off the man's back. Let him do his job. He's doing the right thing. Back up off of him. And Grandma said it.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much, especially since she seems so meek. Oh, I couldn't speak. And then she went into that. It was great. And then there was this White House press briefing where Ed O'Keefe, who's a mainstream journalist, he asked, what proof do you have that anyone's called the president racist? And she's like, are you kidding me? And then I think it was Daily Wire put out this montage of all the talking heads and politicians calling Donald Trump racist, 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 racist. Just wild. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been this week's episodes of Undivided. I was like, what is our show called? I guess my eye injury is going to my brain. We will have a new episode of Politics Unpacking what happened this week during the legislative session. We'll have a new episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham. And then on Sunday, for subscribers only, we will have a new episode of Sundays with Subscribers. So a lot to come in the next few days. But for the rest of you, I guess we'll just see you back here on the live show Monday at noon. And if you're like, I just don't want to subscribe yet, Brandy, there's other things you can do. Share our clips. Subscribe for free to our YouTube channel. Follow me on X and Facebook. Tell people about our show. Help us grow, grow, grow. All right. We will see you guys on Sunday. Hopefully my eye looks better on Monday. I guess we'll find out. Have a fantastic weekend.